Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now the story of the Guadalupeñas, a group of Mexican-American women who started a grassroots religious movement here in Kansas City. For that story, I'm going to turn to Dr. Teresa Torres, a professor of sociology and Latino studies at UMKC. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Gina.
Who were the Guadalupeñas?
The Guadalupanas are a group of women who are part of the Roman Catholic Church, and in particular, it's throughout wherever you're going to find Mexican-American churches in the United States and in Mexico and Latin America, you will find devotees of Guadalupe. And Guadalupe is, the story goes that there is an image of Mary, the Virgin Mary, that appeared to a peasant, and in the long run, she asked this peasant, Mexican, going to the cathedral to go to mass, that he would ask the bishop to build a church where the vision appeared. A couple of events happened in the long run. He was actually able to convince the bishop because the image of the woman that he claims to have seen was embossed on his tilma, which is like a poncho, kind of the front of it. And that picture is in Mexico City. And so there were lots of people who claimed miracles around this image. And so there is a long history since the 1500s that people have followed Guadalupe. And there's a church here in Kansas City that was dedicated to her. The church was located, and it's still located, on Avenida Cesar Chavez, which is formerly the 23rd Street on the way to. So the women's church was closed in 1990, and it wasn't just their church, it was the local church, and they fought back, and they got the bishop to open it as a shrine, and it is now open today.
I want to get back to their story, but first, how did you stumble upon it?
Well, actually, I was working in the West Side, and I got to know the women. And these are kind of your traditional women that would quietly go to church and pray for their family. And yet, here I saw them being activists and actually challenging the bishop. There was a story where they went to see the new bishop who came to town, and they tape recorded their conversation with him because they were afraid maybe he was going to close the shrine again. And they wound up into a shouting match. That's what the secretary told me out in the hall, that they had overheard this back and forth. And so there the women were yelling at their bishop about, you better not close it. And he was yelling back. And it was really a striking story of their activism, the women that I thought were rather demure and would not stand up to authorities. They did because of this devotion.
And that's exactly the issue you've looked into, right?
Right. Yes. And how they organized their community. And they got everybody out. And I think it was very surprising, I think, to the local diocesan authorities, how much money they could raise. It was a very poor neighborhood, and yet they raised enough money to continue to keep the church going quite well.
Why was their church in danger of being shut down? I mean, what was the reason?
Well, there is another church on the southern half of the West Side, across the railroad tracks and across, it's only four blocks, but when it's across a major thoroughfare and railroad tracks, it was really a major dividing line. And so people, and there was a long history that the previous church had not allowed Mexicans to go to church there. So there was kind of that image of, well, you have to sit in the back. And it was, people didn't understand that that's kind of how churches were set up ethnically in the previous days. So they didn't want to go to that church because they didn't feel like that was theirs. And but their church was closed for expediency because of money, and also because there were fewer priests.
How did they end up organizing in a way that was effective, that prevented the closure of the church that they loved, where they felt at home?
Well, what they did was they had the diocese, the Roman Catholic diocese, had asked to have listening sessions. And so they went to those listening sessions. confident that they could convince the authorities, and finding out very quickly that they couldn't. And so they called their own meetings, and they gathered everybody together, and they created a 501c3 so they could get donations. And then they went door to door and got people to support them. And overwhelmingly, they got a longstanding support.
It sounds like a campaign.
Yes, it was. That's a very apt description of what it was. And they even invited men to be a part of their group, which, you know, for decades, it had always been a women's group. And for a short time, there was a separate Guadalupano men's group, but then that died out. But in the 1990s, then they invited the men and got them on board as well.
What does this church mean to the West Side today? I mean, it just celebrated its 100th anniversary, I believe, in a neighborhood that for lots of Kansas Cityans is kind of a new happening place with an appeal that has a lot to do with current trends. And here we're talking about this church with a deep 100-year-old cultural history.
Well, that's the paradox, because it has this historical standing, but the members who are keeping it alive are growing older, and a number of them have died. And so how are they going to keep this alive? It means a lot to this group of people who are still, a lot of them have moved away, but that doesn't mean they don't come back. They do. Family members come back. But it's the younger generation, particularly the younger women, that I don't see a lot of them joining this. And that's where the paradox is how do you keep women to come and do some of the traditional things of volunteerism and support in the midst of a very challenging time when their time, that fewer women are able to give lots of volunteer time, like in the past?
Yeah, the reality of women's lives has changed.
Yes, it has, very dramatically, as well as their attitudes towards institutional religion in general. You know, we're seeing that the more assimilated of women, particularly even Latinas, fall into the category of questioning church authority, and not all of them by any means, but I'm saying that some of the more recent studies have shown more several generation women aren't traditionally going to be expected to be Catholic. Immigrants traditionally are more Catholic.
I know that you are an academic, but for you, as someone who has spent time in this community and speaking to so many people about this history, does it matter to you personally whether this church sees 200?
Yes, it does to me personally. And the reason why is I think women need a place where they can feel a safety to share their faith life. And this is one space in which women have been able to do that for decades and centuries in Mexico and throughout. And so the coupling of ethnic identity and faith is significant for identity, for culture, for meaning and direction. And I'm not saying that's necessarily what everybody wants, but I feel like there are enough women that find this, they call it a home, and it feels that way for them. And I understand that, and I participate in it with them.
Can you describe this home, I mean, visually, for people who haven't been there?
Okay. The walls are, when you walk in, you're going to see, the first thing you're going to see is the altar of the church, and above that is this painted picture of Guadalupe. And she is the Virgin Mary with her hands, I mean, traditionally is seen as the Virgin Mary, but others have called her Tonantzin, which is then there's a combination of the Aztec goddess, some would call, but of course to Roman Catholics, she is the Virgin Mary. She's in a pink dress with a black band that shows that she is it's a maternity band, meaning that she's pregnant. And so as the story goes, the Virgin Mary pregnant with Jesus was there. And then you have this long veil that has the stars on it in turquoise, and she's looking down with her hands folded in prayer, with rays of sun behind her. And she's standing on the moon, a sliver of the moon, with an angel holding her up. So there's many symbols. So I won't go through all of them, but the sun, she's standing in front of the sun god, and she's standing above the moon god. And so it's kind of like that transition from indigenous to Christianity.
Just quickly, I mean, what do you hope people take from this story of the Guadalupanas?
That women in all ethnic backgrounds can be agents in their own community. And I hope that you'll all want to find out more this Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Yes, Dr. Teresa Torres, author of The Paradox of Latina Religious Leadership in the Catholic Church, thank you so much. I appreciate your joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Teresa's giving a presentation about the Guadalupanas this Sunday at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library, and you can go to the library's website for details. We'll link to it with the audio from this discussion as well. That'll be at kcur.org/Central Standard. In fact, head to kcur.org/Central Standard to listen back to anything you've heard or missed on this show. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. Tomorrow, it's a Friday food show. We'll explore our city's seeming revival of Jewish American staples like authentic bagels and delicatessens. Then our critics help us find a classic combo done right. A Search for Meat and Potatoes tomorrow at 10. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.